I updated the paper according to the SOCC format and also addressed many of the comments, except I kept one or two comments in the reference section for the background work. I addressed most of the comments and few of the changes I also made in the experiment section. And another update is that I'm replacing the postmark by the file bench implementation of the postmark, not the original implementation, but the file bench implementation of postmark, which is a kind of barmel benchmark they called. So I'm collecting the data for it.
Okay.
So those are the few updates I have.
I'll check it in. I'm just downloading it now. Okay, you can update, so you should be able to get it now.
Okay.
There's some other issues. It doesn't really compile.
But the one I use, it should get compiled.
It does?
Yeah.
Does it compile for you, Ajay?
No, I'm just compiling right now.
Okay. Maybe the
Yes, it compiled fine.
Okay, so something is wrong with mine. Not sure what it is.
For the title's sake or something.
So another thing I noticed about SOCC that now it is back to single blind reviews. So now we can easily put our own work and then you guys can have a better comparison and there isn't as much as we need to hide stuff.
It's not blind? It's not double blind. Okay.
Wrong with the DVI file, so I do. Oh, okay. This is SOCC format now?
SOCC format.
You might want to, this is, what is it called, SOSP?
That is in the same directory. I can move it.
Yeah, just create a new one so there is less confusion. Okay, so what is the page limit here?
12. We are 13 or 14, a little over 30 right now.
Okay, so maybe we should start by discussing the new data that Yuan Zhen. She obtained, it's a he or a she?
She.
She, okay, good. So, yeah, the reason I kind of guessed that, because she's in my class, I think.
Yeah, I graduated with her.
Okay, so... So that's good. I don't know what that means for our the direction of our work, though. I mean, the fact that we are doing, are we doing better with MATLAB in general and with the kind of parameters that were configured for MATLAB? Yeah?
Yeah, I think the results are better than the FAN.
So in which way? By according to which metric? Is
normalized error. Average, metric, median.
Okay.
Sort of.
Okay, so it's across the board better.
Substantially better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially for single model. Some model, I don't think so, but single model is substantially
better. We want this, single curve model.
The median, I saw the median is almost the same for all the benchmarks.
The
average.
Mm.
So those are the higher or the 90 percentile or big error, which is coming from fan.
Mm.
Those get
reduced.
That's why the median is almost fixed, but the average number, 90 percentile standard deviation, are getting dropped.
Right, so this is ANM using MATLAB.
Is it? Is MATLAB's implementation by ANM?
Okay. I see.
We try to use the same ANM as much as possible.
But it's not so, because they use different parameter setting, they internally use different parameters.
I think if they use the same function, same transfer function, the implementation of the transfer function should be the same. Otherwise, cannot.
Thing is that I was looking at the one time with Lishi.
Mm.
I think she was showing me the choice of functions. I think those are a little different than
functions. Yeah. Some of the functions are different. Yeah. We try to be as close as possible as yours.
So we could possibly report both sets of numbers if that makes sense. But we would also need to do the same kind of experiments with the MATLAB ANN model for the sub-modeling and multi-resolution modeling.
The question is, do we still need sub-modeling and multi-resolution?
Do we need it?
Right.
So,
do we still need it? I don't know.
Well, so why do you say that do we still need it if the median error is the same?
So, okay, so you don't think it's good enough, right? You don't think it's good enough?
Well, I guess if it can get better, why not?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So that's the way I see it. But is the average error like almost zero or what?
No, substantially high. It's for rubies.
So I would be kind of very interested in finding out what happens with the sub-modeling and multi-resolution modeling with the MATLAB implementation, because we actually improved accuracy substantially with the fan implementation, right, when we went to sub-models. And maybe the same trend will be observed even with MATLAB.
Mm.
And if that is true, then we are looking at much better error numbers.
Do you have that Excel file I sent you?
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, open it up. Maybe you can send it to you. I didn't share it with you, that you only sent it to you.
Okay, so these guys are not. This is the one I should forward?
Yeah, I think so.
Irrespective of the result, I think we should, for SOC problem, we should focus, we should stay with the ANN.
Fan. Okay.
Oh, fan?
Oh. Because at this point, if you try to change that, then you may again miss the deadline. That's my.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see.
I'm afraid of that.
Mm.
So. Because nothing wrong is, because we are not reporting something wrong. We have got the results, we are reporting, we are saying we are fans, so all those things are correct.
Really. Mm.
So if it doesn't hurt, because in terms of the approach remains the same.
Mm.
So I would stay with the same one, because if you go to the MATLAB, again you have to draw the same graphs, you have to do all the running and everything, instead of focusing on those things, stay with the fan on this one, NSSC. Later on, if that if we get a good result on the MATLAB, maybe we can submit that as another augmentation to another workshop, another or conference. That's okay.
I think that's a very good point. I think I agree with that. Then exploring new directions, I think we have to start converging, right? Because it's about time that we started converging.
Yeah, we said at some point we have to say that I'm not looking at anymore.
I think that's a good point. So I'm glad you brought that up. So, but this MATLAB finding is quite interesting.
Yes, it's quite interesting. And as a researcher, we need to explore that. Obviously.
Mm-hmm. But I think either way, whenever she has time, she can do the
sub-modeling and multi-resolution.
If we have same kind of improvement,
and we can
then
do
our approach is more confirmed.
Parallelly, she can work on the sub-modeling and all those things, and later on probably she and Sujit can write another paper.
Yeah.
Where she can also participate and write another paper, just showing that, okay, MATLAB approach is much better, actually.
Right.
So is your current results have some sub-modeling better than the results we got from MATLAB?
some result pattern
from using some modeling of FEM.
For FEM?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then the MATLAB global model.
Yeah.
Okay. That's okay. Yeah.
I think what will happen is it will basically raise the bar.
Hmm.
Really. So MATLAB is some model will be much more efficient, more accurate than the FAN sub model, and that kind of thing will basically raise the lower bar.
That makes sense. So yeah. So what we can do is in parallel do the MATLAB acceleration.
Absolutely, we need to do that.
With Yuanzhen and then for the next paper, which is the the whole thing, we could possibly go with the MATLAB.
Okay.
That's one possibility.
Yeah. In the next one, we can do when he is bringing the other algorithm, the autonomous changing the algorithm. He can bring the MATLAB thing in there also. That will be another addition to the another augmentation of the purpose.
Okay.
Fine to me. But for this one, let's get out of the SOC.
Hmm.
First time we have a SOC, probably a week.
Right. It's almost 1 month, but he's living on 1 week.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Yeah, let's focus on.
Okay, so what are the remaining items then? Are the all the reminders addressed and
reminders one address one I couldn't address? I think somebody can help me with that.
Okay.
That's in the background section. Okay, so another interesting thing before going to any of this address, can you scroll down a little bit?
This one?
No, yeah. This is the one I don't know what the 9 comes from, I don't know, probably some compilation, but this is the table I added, is to
Table 9,
it is to, is because I was thinking that how to present the data of the cluster.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it's multidimensional, so many inputs are there, I was thinking that how to do it, it's better to go with the table.
Okay.
So, I was came up with a metric, it's like, so what I did is that for each benchmark, I present number of clusters I found using the algorithm.
Mm.
And then I present that for each consecutive pair of clusters, how many overlaps are there.
Okay.
And what I did is that I chopped up several regions and like come up with some frequency regions. Let's say this is 0 to 5% overlap, 5 to 15% overlap, 15% and above. What I did is that under each frequency distribution, I put the number of pairs in that region.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can say that everything is below 5% or 15%, then we can say that our clustering is good. If most of the pairs belong to the 15% or above, we can say the clustering is bad because it has high overlap.
Okay, I think you have to go a little slower because I sort of lost you along the way. So first of all, the clustering is based on output values.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then that's automatic. The clustering library tells you how many clusters.
Exactly.
Okay.
And mapping and everything.
And it tells you where the clusters are.
The clusters are in the output.
Okay, and then you define your own metric, which is a percentage overlap.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say average percentage overlap across all adjacent clusters.
It's not average percentage overlap. What I did is that if you have 4 clusters, you may have 3 consecutive clusters overlapping with each other.
Okay.
So one, let's say 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mm.
You have overlap between 1 and 2, 2 and 3, 3 and 4. So you have 3 pairs overlapping.
Right, adjacent clusters.
Adjacent clusters.
So what average overlap across adjacent clusters, or
it's like I determine how much is the percentage overlap between 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
So, and how much is for 2 and 3, 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say everything and.
So it would be important for here to be very precise about what you mean by the percentage overlap. What is it that's overlapping here?
Okay, the percentage overlap is measured by the, it's a standardized, I was checking at like how do you represent the overlap between 2 sets.
Okay.
Basically it's 2 sets.
Okay.
So this is a mathematical, very well-used mathematical representation. It's called the Jaccard coefficient.
Okay.
It's basically A intersection B divided by A union B.
Okay. Now, what is A and B here? A is
one cluster, B is another cluster.
I know, but more precisely, what does A mean? How do you know what A is? How do you compute the value of A here?
A is the input parameter, output parameter, what is that?
A is a cluster.
How is the cluster defined?
Cluster is defined by its input.
Input parameter.
Input parameter.
In ranges and the input parameter.
Ranges in the input.
And there are multiple dimensions.
Multiple dimensions.
Okay. So you have to define that, cluster overlap very carefully. I mean, do you take average overlap across each dimension or average across all dimensions and that sort of a thing?
That depends on if we can define a cluster definition. How do you define a cluster? The cluster is defined by its input parameters. Now, how do we pick the input parameters? It could be in any of the dimensions. If we can only, between two consecutive clusters, if there is one differentiating parameter we can get, that there is one thing that is unique to one cluster,
mm-hmm.
at least one,
mm-hmm.
in one dimension it is unique to one cluster, and which is, so we can define based on that.
So if there is, let's say there is no overlap across one dimension, that means zero overlap?
Zero overlap.
Yeah, because there is basically no overlap when you consider the tuple of three parameters.
Three parameters.
So
the overlap is only when there is overlap in all the dimensions.
Yeah.
Overlap in all the dimensions.
If there is overlap in all the dimensions, then how do you measure the percentage?
Then we say it is an outlier. It's an overlap.
Yeah, but how do you measure the overlap then? Let's say, for example, input 1, input 2, input 3.
Let's say,
what is the formula?
Markers are in.
Okay, let's say you have two clusters here and clusters here.
Mm-hmm.
This cluster is defined by one input set, X, Y, Z.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also defined by another input set, let's say X prime, Y prime, Z prime.
Now here X, Y and Z are ranges from X1 to X2, Y1 to Y2 and Z1 to Z2.
Z1 to Z2.
Okay.
So how I define a cluster,
mm-hmm.
How you define the boundary, cluster boundary in terms of input parameters.
Mm-hmm.
So I check the inputs corresponding to these points.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can find out, okay, only at least in one dimension,
mm-hmm.
I can find the uniqueness,
mm-hmm.
which is not in other two clusters, or let's say in consecutive cluster. So I define that as a cluster definition or a cluster boundary.
You already defined the cluster for me as far as I'm concerned. The XYZ is the definition of the cluster. X1 to X2, Y1 to Y2, and Z1 to Z2. Now, what you're defining now may be overlap related. But these define the cluster, right?
But the clusters are formed on the basis of the output parameter, isn't it?
Right. So the clusters are based on output parameter. That's true. So how do you map that to X, Y, Z?
The output parameter,
that's what I am describing.
Oh, I see.
So,
okay.
So it's not the cluster. It's not, you don't get X, Y, Z from the cluster.
No,
cluster.
You get something like O1.
You get O1. Corresponding to. It's not O1. O1 is, you have a set of points, basically.
Yeah, so.
O11, O12, O13, and so on.
So this is, it's like a big O something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, say O1 through O n, right? And the other one is O1 prime through O n prime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I believe what you're doing now is basically you're checking the values of X, Y, Z on O1 to O n, and you're creating the ranges of X, Y, and Z for the O1 to O n.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that doesn't require any intelligence, right? You just do the reverse mapping. You don't do any elimination or anything.
No,
of
nothing.
That. So you don't do any outliers? Or
no, nothing.
Okay. So you have X1 to XN, Y1 through YN, Z1 through ZN.
No, you have two values.
Or the borders.
Borders. X1 to X2, Y1 to Y2, Z1 to Z2. And
okay.
The next one is X1 prime to X2 prime, Y1 prime to Y2 prime, and Z1 prime to Z2 prime. Now we have that. Now tell me about how to define the overlap.
So, how do I define
the overlap? How do you compute the overlap, percentage overlap?
Okay, now let's say which one is overlap, which point is overlap. Let's say, before doing the percentage, let's say which point is overlap. How do you determine the overlap? The overlap is determined by if we have three parameters,
By the way, when you say which point is your luck, you mean to say which points, or there may be none at all, right?
But the range may be overlap.
There may be, yeah, what is the range of overlap, which could be no overlap or it could be some finite range. Now that overlap itself, if you think about it, is again an XYZ. There is again a range, which could be 0, 0, 0, which means no overlap, or it could be some finite, again, X1 double prime to X2 double prime. Okay, let's say your overlap is another cluster, but it's not a cluster from the original set of clusters, but it's a sort of a overlap cluster. You can think of it that way, right? So you have these two clusters here, right? And there is this overlap. You can define this cluster, this overlap cluster, in the same way as you define these two guys.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So why not do that? And once you have that, then how do you define the overlap?
I think it's a little delta x, delta y, x minus 4.
Why is this important?
This is important to determine if submodeling is a viable approach.
Mm.
In a specific case.
Because
once we had a clustering,
mm.
should we use submodeling, should we use multi-resolution modeling, or mm. should we not use any of this stuff?
And we determine that based on the overlap?
Yeah, so that's one approach,
okay.
to do it based on overlap.
Okay.
I mean, if the clusters are all overlapping,
uh-huh.
then it doesn't make much sense,
okay.
to do submodeling.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay.
So, in my case,
mm-hmm.
If some of the points here
mm-hmm.
across the three tuples
mm-hmm.
has a match with some of the points here
mm-hmm.
in the three tuples, so if some of these combinations of in those points has a across all the dimensions is common to some points across the set two, i.e. declared as an overlapping point.
Right, but if you look at the figure, you have to determine an overlapping range across all three dimensions. Right, that's what you need to determine here, right? And not one point as overlap. You look at this.
Why may not overlap? The range may overlap.
Right. So, if you look at this figure, there is a range again, x, y, z, in all dimensions that overlaps.
Mm-hmm.
And that's easy to figure out, right? I mean, I don't know if it's easy or not, but it seems like you can figure that out with some math, right? So if you have,
you can figure it out.
So you need to have overlap on all three.
Yeah, I can see the formula, actually. The overlap formula.
Okay. So if you have, let's say, the first cluster defined as, let's say, x1, x2, and then y1, y2, and then z1. But, Sajid, do you see that, there may be a point in the overlap space, but what you need to observe here is that the overlap, it's a region.
What is the region? You need to define the region in terms of the percentage of the cluster region.
Is that?
That's all it matters.
That makes sense to you?
Mm-hmm. Because a point may not be in the region. Actual point may not be in there.
The thing is that if you say based on the points in your training set, okay, this point is in the overlap region, and there are 10 other points in the non-overlapping region, then your overlap is, I don't know, 10%, right? 1 out of 10. But if you were to pick more points in that overlapping region for your training set, then your overlap will be different, because there will be more points in that overlapping region.
If there is a overlap, then you define the overlap as one,
mm.
x1o, x2o, y1o, y2o, z1o, z2o. Then you define x1o minus x2o divided by x2 prime. X2 minus x1. to be the one on this direction. Similarly, if you go on this direction. You need to do it minus, because if you do it this way, you are computing this on twice.
But remember that we need overlap in each dimension. You may have overlap only in X.
This is one dimension overlap.
And then you multiply that. You need to multiply
it,
not add it.
No, multiply will reduce it.
Right, because if one of these is zero, we need the whole thing, whole overlap to
be multiply.
Or something. I mean, I don't know if it's a multiply or something more. Maybe multiply would make sense. Because what we are looking
multiply
at
makes sense because it is a cardinal. It is a cardinal, basically. Yeah.
Right.
Because you're looking from the three dimensions,
right.
The multiplication. Yeah.
But what?
There will be 10% overlap in one dimension, but there will be 5% overlap in another dimension. That will basically mean.
I think what we need to do is something like this. Right? And then here we have, again, a product.
Yeah, that's basically multiplication.
So we're taking the area of that cluster, this overlap cluster, and dividing it, sorry, volume, or, you know, how many our dimensions, and then we're dividing it by the volume of the entire space occupied by both clusters.
You basically the same thing. You're exactly doing the same thing.
No, it's not doing the same thing.
No, you have the set A, you have the set B, and all we're doing is A intersection B, thereby A union B. This is A union B.
Right.
Because this is the intersection. Intersection range measurement.
Yes.
And this is the union.
Yes.
This is the union measurement. So
in terms of
your coefficient is the same thing.
Right.
It's independent.
And doing it the way you're doing it using just points is not correct, because that depends on how many points you pick in the space.
Instead of the number of points, you're going by the region, area.
Okay. So this is a sort of the volume overlap.
Yeah, it's still slim, but
okay, that makes sense. That's good. Okay, so once we have this, this is
so
some sort of a fraction.
Now it's a, let's say, it's only between two consecutive clusters,
mm-hmm.
Right? So the way I represent is that, let's say you have four clusters,
yeah.
A, B, and C, D. A, B, C, D.
Okay.
So there are three consecutive dim regions of
overlap.
Possible overlap. So what I did is that I represent in a chart.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say this overlap is basically a ratio, so you can you can take it as a percentage.
Fraction of overlap.
Percentage.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, let's say from 0 to 5%,
mm-hmm.
how many pairs belong? From 5 to 15%, how many pairs belong? And 15% above, how many pairs belong? Kind of a frequency distribution. Because each
mm-hmm.
for each benchmark, I may have many of these metrics. So how do I represent it?
How many pairs belong? You may have 100 pairs that belong in, let's say, above 15%. But if you started off with 10,000 clusters, then 100 overlaps may not be as significant. Right?
So we need to somehow normalize it.
Yeah, somehow normalize it. But also, I mean, if you just take, let's say, average overlap across adjacent clusters. So let's say the first overlap is 5%, the next overlap is 0.
That's again.
The next overlap is something else, then you take an average across all those, and then you get a single percentage value, right? And maybe that single percentage value is more easy to
understand.
Right here, this distribution, we might end up making it more complex and difficult to understand.
Okay.
But I mean, to be more rigorous, you want to look at distribution. But at the same time, you want to...
Because it's not easy to understand.
I think the mean is better in this case.
Hmm.
Average is just.
And we can say that if the average overlap is less than 10%, then yes, you can use sub-modeling. And then the next question is which clusters to use and which clusters to merge and that sort of stuff. Do we have any discussion with Rasmus?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just any clear numbers.
Mm.
Throw some numbers in it.
Mm.
I had a qualitative discussion.
Mm.
I need to say that if there are more than 15% overlap,
mm.
we merge it.
Okay. Well, yeah, those numbers are the are where the questions may arise. Why did you pick certain number? So we have to be careful to justify that, right? Okay. So if it makes sense to go with something like this, and then you can, you know, you can present this average cluster. Or, you know, first of all, define this metric carefully, right? To me, it seems just like volume, the fraction of the volume overlapping across adjacent clusters and across the input parameter space, right? And if you say something like that, I think that should be good enough. You don't need to provide all these formulae. I don't think it's necessary. But you have to define the metric that
okay.
you're using and then present the values in the table.
I think
that metric.
Based on single dimension, it's
mm-hmm.
only output.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you come up with that formula. And this is okay, but I think for three, it's just three dimensional
mm-hmm.
Way of measuring the difference between your two states.
Yeah.
So
I think right.
Will you use this method in real? To compare the result, prediction with accuracy.
Not prediction accuracy, it's just how good the clustering is.
Good. Because we use this to decide whether to use sub-modeling or not. Right?
Yes.
So shouldn't we compare, based on this, we see that we need sub-modeling, but we don't use sub-modeling, compare the two cases?
Right.
Just tend to support this, right? Just support this method.
Yeah, I think that's important. So what if you don't have any of this? And then you blindly use the clusters
right.
that were given
right.
and you do a sub-modeling. Versus
you can do the reverse mapping there. It's very hard.
You
cannot define these boundaries well then.
No, what I'm saying is that let's say you use sub-modeling blindly versus use sub-modeling only if this criteria
yeah,
works.
That's what I'm saying, that blindly is very hard because if you don't know the boundary, when a query comes, you cannot send it to any cluster.
You could use ensembling or something
yeah,
like that.
You can use ensembling. Or maybe a better way is based on the distance to the cluster center. You apply a weight. You do a weighted sum, weighted average.
Hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. So weighted average, weighted based on the distance to the centroid
right.
of the cluster.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So there are lots
no,
of accuracy.
Then I cannot
do use.
The mapping here. That's my problem. We can use both. Use both.
No.
But I'm saying that when, because the cluster is based on the training. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if I cannot define a boundary, there is no clusters in inputs. There are clusters in outputs, but there is no cluster in terms of inputs.
No, but we already do the mapping. We already did the mapping.
No, but if the clustering is completely messed up, that's why I cannot do multi-resolution modeling.
No, why can't you take the lowest value of the output and the highest value of the output and look at the input parameter corresponding to that, and that defines the range in the input, right? Which is what you're doing here anyway. You're doing that, right? Aren't you doing that?
Yeah, kind of.
No, that's exactly what you're doing, isn't it? I mean, otherwise I don't understand what you're doing.
Let me check. Yeah.
So you take the output value and find output values in the cluster and map those to ranges in the input space, right?
Okay.
Or a range in a three-dimensional space.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you have that, you create multiple models without worrying about cluster overlap or any of that. Right. You just create one model for each of those clusters. Okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Is that possible or no?
Yes.
Okay. And now when you have a new point, that point may belong to multiple clusters.
Well, then we do that ensemble.
Yeah. Okay. So, is it possible?
Yeah, it's possible. Does the results won't make any sense?
Yeah, so, which is why we want something like this. So, because we are saying that, okay, you need a lot of complexity to make sure that your sub-modeling is done correctly. And some reviewer might say, well, this is too complex. Why can't I just go ahead and just use my clusters and do ensembling? Right? Why go through all of this pain? Right? And so it would be important to validate this approach by saying, okay, if you didn't go through that pain, here's what you get.
Okay.
What is intuitive to you may not be intuitive to the reader. Okay. Because you've been seeing all that data. So, you know, things are by now probably, you know, you already know all the numbers by so, yeah, those things are intuitive to you, but it has to be intuitive.
Then I think we should focus this particular result of clustering when we introduce those clustering.
Yeah.
Not delaying until the experimental section. I think we move to the modeling section and describe this is the way and way we measure clusters.
You mean when we describe sub-modeling in the modeling section?
Exactly.
And where we show
this will follow because multi-resolution doesn't help in many cases. So we just use this metric and show that it doesn't help. And why it doesn't help? Because as Ming said, that do the error analysis, it's completely nothing.
So what we are contrasting here is that ensembled averaging across, you know, across submodels versus choosing submodels more carefully. I mean, or redefining the clusters and redefining submodels based on this sort of overlap criteria. Right? Those are the two options we are comparing here. Ensembling versus this redefining of clusters. After this, you may merge certain clusters, and you may carefully partition clusters where there are overlap and those kinds of things. Right?
Yeah.
So if you have overlap, that's not significant. How do you partition the clusters? Do you still use ensembling, or you just make sure that they're well partitioned?
If there, let's say, 5% overlap,
mm-hmm.
I just include it in both the clusters.
Oh, so you use ensembling then.
In a way, this is basically ensembling, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so I think that's important. So, if you feel that that sort of a discussion is more appropriate in the modeling section, we should get that in there.
Okay.
All right, good. So,
and this is easy to calculate, it's just that you can finish it in half a day.
Okay, and then we have this table, we have this new var mail file bench.
Yeah, that's still going on.
And that you're collecting data for that?
Yeah.
Okay.
The script is running.
Mm-hmm. And, okay, so what we found was the Rubis browsing and bidding, we could use multi-resolution, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this data here has to somehow support that multi-resolution would make sense in browsing and bidding. And is that evident from these number of clusters? I guess we had to wait for you to get the new overlaps.
Overlap measurements
for all of them.
Well, multi-resolution is basically error-based clustering, nothing else. If you use a single model, you found the normalized errors across each point, and you do a clustering on.
Okay, so here we are giving a criteria for how to choose or how to decide whether sub-modeling is a good idea or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not just how to do the sub-modeling, but also to determine whether it's a good idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, we need a criteria by which we can decide whether multi-resolution modeling is a good idea or not, right? And ideally, these criteria should be independent, right? So using the first criteria, we know the applicability of the first guy and the second guy, right? So we need to come up with something for multi-resolution modeling. So think about what you're doing right now. What are the intuitive properties of browsing and bidding that lends themselves to multi-resolution modeling. Because not being able to do sub-modeling does not necessarily mean you should do multi-resolution modeling, right? Because that could be your criteria. If the sub-modeling doesn't work, do multi-resolution modeling. But that may not be the right approach. So think about
when you do sub-modeling, and when you do multi-resolution modeling, is in already in the writing.
It's already there.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is the criteria?
Find some those cluster union metric for that.
Okay. But if the metric is already there, I mean, if then maybe just a question of defining it more formally. I mean, so what are you using right now to determine, or what have you written to determine whether
the region is very intuitive knife. If the high error values are concentrated towards a specific specific area of the inputs, we do multi-resolution on those input ranges.
Okay, so what you could do then is look at average errors within each cluster and because that's what you're looking at, right? There are multiple clusters and there's one cluster which has very high average error and the other cluster
before doing clustering. So I'm doing single model.
Okay.
So in single global ANN model,
mm-hmm.
you plot the
mm-hmm.
you plot the normalized error versus input dimension,
mm-hmm.
and you see that these normalized errors have a pattern. It's, let's say, focused, it's concentrated in an area of the inputs.
Right. Once again, that's because you're using a human brain. Right? You have to use a machine brain there. How would you determine that automatically? That the errors are concentrated in a certain part of the space. So you would use some sort of a clustering on the error values,
mm-hmm.
and look at what is the average error within each cluster.
Yes.
Average value within each cluster. And,
mm-hmm.
and then based on that is how you would decide this, algorithmically or automatically. Right? So think about that a little bit and then maybe you can write something along those lines. And also show the data similar to, maybe not the same metric because now we are talking about different metric. So there will be a different
union of sets and those things.
But here you're talking more about an average value within each cluster.
No, not average value, because anyway, if you need to define input boundaries.
Mm-hmm. See, here I see that we are clustering based on output values.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Like we'll do clustering with the error values. But that error value should be mapped to the input ranges.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of O1, we just replace with E1.
Okay.
And E1 prime.
Okay, maybe that's true. So let's why don't you work on that and write something up and we can do revisions. So maybe you're right that we had to go through the same process even with multi-resolution modeling, but with a different starting point.
Different starting.
Okay. To explain this one, you don't need to write this, all this formula and everything. If you don't have space, you can just explain it in one or two lines.
Okay, so I think these are the sort of the key contributions of the paper, the way I see it. Okay. That we are using ANN is something that we've already done before, but how to carefully use the ANN, I see that as one contribution of this paper,
mm-hmm.
right? And then, evaluation of the approaches.
Mm-hmm.
Is something related to a new parameter, a new input parameter, which is the latency. So we have to kind of highlight and be very articulate about what exactly we are doing and how we are doing it so someone else can reproduce it.
Okay,
so what else is remaining at this point?
Apart from this discussion of some models and this, there are one or two reminders in the background section.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because we wrote this paper with a view of double blinded,
mm-hmm.
We need to a little bit change it.
And there was something about the introduction too, right?
The introduction has to be changed because now it's single blind. So we can directly compare our previous work.
And the other reminders were largely, I think, scattered in sections 3 and 4, at least in the previous
version. Mostly addressed those.
Okay, so you've addressed all of those. That's good. And what about the evaluation? I know we had some discussion on the evaluation.
Evaluation is the last two graphs.
The last two graphs.
Because we don't have space to provide every kind of thing. It's figure 8 and figure
9.
Figure,
yeah,
seven.
Figure 7.
That two would be replaced.
While you guys were talking, I was going through the paper a little bit. So I think one, we definitely need to work on space, and one thing I noticed that a lot of our figures, for example, figure 1, 2, 3, they are sort of sparse, and we can shrink them in height. But currently, the figure area is very big compared to the number of data points in there. So I think we should try to get some space in those figures. Second, these tables have 9 in front of them.
Yeah.
Is that some typo?
I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's a LaTeX bug. We've had that before.
Okay, okay. So I am assuming that we'll take care of.
Yeah, we'll
third, in table 8, there are a lot of these NAs in front of multi-resolution model. Are these the data points that we just need to process and put in here, or are these something that we need to even collect data on?
Oh, those NA, not applicable?
Yeah.
No, those are the, we cannot do multi-resolution on every benchmark.
So, there, so that's the criteria we are talking about here. And but it would also be, you know, good to show those numbers. What if you did do multi-resolution? I mean, is it that the multi-resolution will produce a very bad result, or is it that there's no way the multi-resolution can even be set up? Or cannot be done? What does the NA mean here?
Because thing is that when we don't have any well-defined cluster region in multi-resolution, it's basically we are doing single model.
I see. So there are no clusters in the error dimension?
No, no, no. There will be clusters. If you just use the clustering function, you can have some clusters. But when you map it to inputs, the methodology, as Ming said, that the smallest
thing
is basically the
whole. Oh, I see. That's a good point. So, so that NA means
that's the whole point. Basically, means that's a global, right?
That's a global.
Then that just tells the global thing.
No, the global is already here.
Yeah, but that's
the thing is, we are showing NA for 3 out of 5. It seems a little too much. I mean, if the majority cannot be done, then why are we proposing the model? Or if it is the global, then I think we should put the global numbers, because that's what it is in those cases.
Yeah, that's what Koshik is saying. Just put the global numbers.
Just put the global number and say that, okay, in those cases, as we can see that, okay, multi-resolution doesn't help because it's giving, because of this reason, it's giving the same output as the global thing. It's becoming global.
Actually, Koshik is right. Because when you think of that approach, because it's basically the error would be the same as the global. Because we are eventually doing global modeling.
I can understand why it could be similar, but the exact same numbers when you do a multi-resolution.
If the range is the same, if all the ranges are complete ranges, then it becomes a global model.
Right, but that's a very special case in my mind, at least.
That's what
right?
I'm saying.
That's what it happened in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I mean, in that case,
that's kind of unlikely, like you say.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, you cannot, because error can be in any region.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very possible that you cannot.
One thing is very possible, another thing is, it's okay, is it every case?
Mm.
These are two different statements. So is it very possible, or is it actually that's the global model.
Yeah, I have to be picky here because
so let me find that.
Yeah.
Let me do the
point we're trying to make is that okay, whatever it is, run it, get the result and put it. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. But in fact we have one more benchmark that we still haven't figured out, right? With its
Vermeil. File bench
basically. Could be possible that multi resolution applies here.
So we have not gone to TPCC, yeah.
We haven't done TPCC.
Okay.
For some reason it's not working out.
It's not a feasible benchmark for this kind of work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so we need to do that too.
During the discussion, I think this point was getting discussed. I could not follow the discussion clearly because of the lack of board. But given this multi-resolution and sub-model, do we have a winner between the two? I mean, if somebody has to just use one of them, how do they decide? And even if they run both of them, which one should they trust?
Right. I think that question is answered only partially and not entirely, at least that's the way I see it. We have a criteria for whether sub-modeling should be used. We have a criteria for whether multi-resolution modeling should be used.
Uh-huh.
And if one of them says no and the other one says yes, then yeah, we have an answer to the question you're asking. If both of them say yes, which is what is happening in probably in the first two, Rubis browsing and bidding. I think both of them say yes. And then which one to pick in that kind of a situation, we have not discussed that in the paper.
Oh, okay, okay. And actually, this not so good thing is that in those cases, in one case, the multi-res wins, and in the other case, the sub-model wins.
Well, actually, the way I see it is that multi-res has more control over the variance.
90%
error. And sub-modeling provides better average error.
Oh, but then I think if somebody is doing a decision-making,
yeah,
he is not very comfortable just knowing that somebody has better standard deviation or average.
Yeah.
Because
that's true.
And I see. Okay, so I think we need to address that somehow.
Yeah, we do need to address that. So that's another reminder that we need to add to the paper. Let's put it as a reminder, otherwise we're going to forget. But do you understand what the question is? Okay.
Right. Yeah, another thing is in table 9, I see that 5 to 10% is also 0, and then 15% and above is also 0, and 10 to 15% range is somehow missing.
I think that's going to change. That's going to change based on our today's discussion. All of that is going to change. Yeah.
Okay. I was just going to say that if you have zeros in the end for all the values, for all the rows, then it may be just okay to converge those and just put them in a single column.
Right. Yeah. Maybe.
First person an hour.
Yeah.
Because otherwise this is not giving more information if there are zeros in some column.
Correct. That's true. I read it as just those zeros being placeholders and we don't have numbers yet. I mean, I when I looked at that table, I thought these were just some random placeholders that you put in there. But if those are real numbers, then yeah, it doesn't make sense to have two different columns which are exactly the same.
And the range is discontinuous. It says 5 to 10 and 15 and above.
Right.
So I'm hoping that that was also some placeholder then.
I think so. I mean, it seems like these are placeholders. Is that right? Or are they real numbers?
No, those are real numbers.
Okay, if they are real numbers, then you need to revisit this table. I mean,
but
this
table will change.
This table will change, but it's just feedback to Sajid. You need to that the table doesn't make a lot of sense. So, all right. So let's come up with a plan for the next week, I think.
Let me focus on Tuesday. I'll get everything done.
Can we do something else in parallel in the meanwhile? Because there is a weekend coming up.
An introduction, I think, is better you guys take up.
Okay.
And background.
Okay. Yeah, I was planning to work on the introduction next anyway, when originally we were working on the SOSP submission.
Just want to make sure that we don't have the
No, we don't have a meeting today.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but I'll let you know when we start again.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Thanks. So, yeah. So let me do the introduction, and taking into account that this is
single blind.
Okay. And there's one more section which you said we need the background as well.
Background.
Yeah. Okay.
But background is very little reminders. Okay. One or two reminders.
Okay. So
mostly our previous work, we need to study it in a different way. That's it.
Okay, so I can do a revision of the first two sections over the weekend. And in the meanwhile, you can
I'll take care of the rest of the things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I can also make a pass this weekend. Let me know whenever I should. I'll go and try to make a pass from starting to end.
Okay.
Things which I may not understand, I just put question marks or something.
Okay. Yeah, so I think, Ajay, you had some comments in sections 3 and 4, which or maybe even in 5, which Sajib has addressed. So if you want to revisit your comments, that would be good. And see if they are satisfactory or not.
Okay, and I am still supposed to revise some of the text in section 3, I think, regarding the latency and share.
I think
the share I discarded. I mean, that is still the paper, but I co-comment it out.
Oh, the shares, yeah.
Because we don't have space to discuss everything.
The other issue I see more than the discussion is that if we do not address it in our design or evaluation, and just discuss it at a very high level, I don't know how much value there is in that sort of a discussion. Maybe there are some intuitive points which can be made, but I'm not quite sure if we can.
I think it's for the sake of completion that we can say this is something we didn't evaluate, but these are some controls that are being developed and potentially they can be used to influence latency.
Okay.
That's part of the point.
Okay, yeah, I think that would be a good idea. So yeah, I think having that sort of discussion valuable.
And now that with mClock paper, we can even say that in future versions, if there is reservation in place, then that can also be used as a control for latency. We are basically saying that because of lack of the implementation with you, we are not evaluating, but in future one can use these extra controls.
Okay, that's good. So yeah, let's do state that then.
Okay, and another thing I just saw, I had it on my list, is figure 9E.
Yeah.
9E seems kind of that the actual is very different from predicted, and somehow predicted is not even nicely monotonic.
What?
Predicted is all over the place.
You mean 5, right?
Why is
this
math?
It's
all
the
9.
9E.
It's because after I convert the formatting, it's messed up.
There is a 9 everywhere in all the figures.
Yeah,
so
that's a LaTeX folder. It has been solved.
Yeah. Well, one thing you can do in the 5E, right? Yeah. So the
5E.
Yeah, we did have a long discussion about this figure, and what we decided, Ajay.
Uh-huh.
I mean, your concern is about this very weird error behavior, right?
Yeah, it looks fishy and people would have doubts and things like that.
Right, so I'll let Sajib address that because we already did this.
Yeah, it's because of the postmark has this initialization phase. And
uh-huh.
So in postmark you cannot control the time very precisely. So what was happening is the initialization period and the benchmark run period is coincided with the data collection stat. So that's how some of the stats are conflicting. So even with the same input combinations and latency, we had different transactions per second. So that's why the ANN gets confused and it gets this kind of weird behavior.
No, but I think in that case, during the initialization, we should not be taking measurements or...
I think the reason why this is happening, Ajay, is because that the postmark experiment is being run for a fixed period of time. for a fixed period of time, and the amount of time that the initialization phase takes, or as a percentage of that value, it changes across different resource allocations.
Okay.
Because there's two different phases in which the first phase is, you know, not really useful, but it's still being accounted for in the final data that we get. The data that we get is misleading. I mean, even the training data is messed up. Right, so what we decided in the end is to not use the benchmark at all, because it's not a stable benchmark. It's not a stable workload because of this initialization phase. And that's why we've been discussing this file bench var mail as a replacement for postmark.
True. I think even in file bench, they have this initialization. But the good thing is, once it initializes all the data set, next time when you run, you can set a flag and it doesn't reinitialize again and again.
Okay. I think that's what Sajeev is also nodding his head here. He's also agrees with you. Yeah. So that's the reason I guess he picked this var mail.
Okay. Well, I think this thing worries me a little bit that, so in practice, how will such a model behave if you have a system where you're collecting measurements and during some time the application is not even running? So you collect measurements, application output is zero because some initialization is going on, and then those measurements are somehow part of the learning system.
Right. Yeah, I think
we ignore those measurements to say if the application output is zero for some input, we throw away that input.
Hmm. Yeah, that could be one approach. I think it's good to address that in the discussion section. We do have a discussion section with several questions that we try and address. I think this would be a good one to do that, to include as well.
And I think if we extrapolate it further, the issue would be that if you get some, if you measure some stats and the application is somehow not using or there isn't enough demand in the application, then also the output number would be small.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if the demand changes, then our model will change as well. And eventually, if we use this as an online, feedback loop, then we would retrain our model and then realize that, providing more than a certain amount of resources is not necessary, so we can reduce the resource allocation. Right. So in an environment where the model gets updated with more information, that kind of an issue would be addressed. But we are not there yet. I mean, that's one of the items in the discussion, that, you know, how do we use this sort of a model in an online setting where demand can change.
Okay,
so I think so we have a plan for now, and so Ajay, you're looking at sections 3. There is a, with respect to the shares discussion, and then 4 and 5 with the reminders that Sajeev addressed. And in the meanwhile, I'll look at 1 and 2.
And I'll work for the rest of the sections 4, 5, and mostly.
Okay, I'll try to make a pass through 3 and 4 before weekend if I can.
Okay.
That way, if people are revising over the weekend, they would have the new comments.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.